We need to have the aviation industry in place and ready to go. And if they've laid off tens of thousands of skilled workers, we just won't be ready to bounce back, and it's going to hurt all of us.
This is Can Do, a podcast that explores the business lessons critical for success in these volatile times. Can Do shares the insights of industry experts, along with the experiences and advice of local businessmen and businesswomen. Whether you're a business owner, an entrepreneur, or your career is affected by the current economic climate, these lessons will give you the guidance you need to make informed decisions about your future. I'm your host, Arnie Sherman. We are now more than 7 months into the COVID-19 pandemic, and perhaps no industry has been more disrupted than transportation. Global air traffic is down 85% from this time last year. Air carriers are set to lose more than $84 billion this fiscal year. New York City subway traffic is down 75%, and more than 4,000 transport workers have contracted COVID-19, with more than 130 deaths reported. The thoughts on everyone's mind are, when will it be safe to travel again, really? And will business travel ever be the same? Joining us today on Can Do to discuss this and the state of all forms of mass transportation are CNN commentator and former managing director of the National Transportation Safety Board, Peter Goltz, Allie Malice, American Airlines flight attendant and government relations representative for the 27,000-member Association of Professional Flight Attendants, and Missoula International Airport Director Chris Jensen. Support for this episode of Can Do is provided by the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives. Additional support comes from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. And Parsons, Bailey & Latimer, a regional law firm with national expertise, representing the interests of Montana entrepreneurs and businesses. More information at ParsonsBailey.com. Peter, Allie, Chris, welcome to the show today on all things related to travel in the time of COVID-19. Peter, global air travel is down 85% since this time last year. Carriers are set to lose $84 billion this year. The airlines want you to believe it's safe to travel. Is it?
Well, I think the data shows that it is relatively safe to travel. But I think the aviation industry has been hobbled by a lack of leadership from Washington on this issue. The Department of Transportation and the FAA, in my opinion, and the FAA is the agency that oversees the safety and operations of our nation's airspace, they have not moved for a unified national safe flight policy. You know, individual airlines have been asked to set their own policies. You know, wearing masks is now fairly universal, but it was not at the beginning. It was not required. And I think the Department of Transportation and the FAA have made the recovery for the air carriers and for airports more difficult by not having a national policy.
So you mentioned the Department of Transportation. You mentioned the Federal Aviation Administration. You used to be managing director for National Transportation Safety Board. What do they do and how do they fit into this picture?
The Safety Board is an independent agency in Washington, D.C. that simply investigates accidents, whether it's aviation accidents, rail accidents, marine accidents, certain vehicular accidents, pipeline accidents. They investigate the accident, they find out what happened, they issue a probable cause, and they make recommendations on how to see that kind of accident doesn't happen again. So in terms of the COVID-19 crisis, they are not directly involved in the day-to-day regulation of the air travel industry. That's the Department of Transportation, Secretary Chao, and the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration.
Allie, from a flight attendant perspective, I want to ask you the same question. Is it safe to travel?
We are taking every precaution we can as flight attendants. Our union has pushed our airline hard to adopt as many cleaning precautions. We've asked for many social distancing accommodations as possible. So we are taking everything very seriously. As Peter said, we don't fully know what's going on because of our lack of oversight in Washington with the DOT.
You wear two hats. You're a flight attendant, but you're also the government relations representative to the Association of Professional Flight Attendants. Can you tell me about APFA and what their mission is?
Our mission is to represent the American Airlines flight attendants. And since the COVID-19 pandemic began, we've had two main issues, and that's been the safety of our members and the job security of our members. We mentioned the aviation industry has completely been rocked by this pandemic. Concerns about safety and a drastic drop in passenger demand. So we are representing our flight attendants by making sure that we have access to personal protective equipment from the very beginning of the pandemic, from asking for permission to wear masks to now being actually required to wear masks. Everything has changed in the last 6 months or so, with many, many flight attendants and aviation workers across our country likely to lose their jobs in October without an extension of the payroll support program.
And if they lose their jobs, they're not likely to come back, or how likely are they to come back?
It's an indefinite furlough. Actually, on Tuesday, I got the number that I would be included in that group. So it could be multiple years. It depends all on passenger demand, and it depends on consumer confidence and how safe we can make air travel. And believe me, the airlines are taking all the precautions they can to make sure that our passengers are safe, that they feel safe, and that we resume a strong aviation industry here in the country.
Chris, what does the Missoula airport operation and traffic look like now compared to last year at this time?
Thanks, Arnie. I think everybody knows our traffic has dropped off substantially across the industry, and certainly here in Montana and Missoula specifically. In March and April, we were at about 5% of our normal traffic. Through the summer months now, June, July, August, that's typically our busiest time of the year. We're running at about 55% of normal, but we are concerned as we go into the fall. And I think as Ali already mentioned, with the potential for the CARES Act money to run out to the airlines, that we'll see airlines starting to cut capacity to peel their schedule back, and we worry that those numbers are going to go back down.
I noticed that in some of the literature about what's happening and some of the news stories, that while you're maybe at 55%, Chris, you're having a lot more private planes landing in Missoula. What does that look like?
Yeah, that is in fact true. And it's something that maybe we hadn't anticipated initially. As an example, in the month of July, we're up about 25% in general aviation traffic of all types. So that's everything from small single engine aircraft to multi-engine corporate type jets. We're up about 25% over the prior year. So that's a substantial jump.
Peter, Ali mentioned that the airlines are trying to do everything they can. I assume that means, you know, HEPA air filters and cleaning the planes. What else should they be doing? Are they doing enough? Do those filters work?
Here's the thing, Arnie. One is in virtually all of the, the jet commercial aircraft except the 787, they have an air system called a bleed air system that essentially is powered by the engines and goes through HEPA filters. The HEPA filters appear to have been successful in past potential pandemic with SARS, with Asian flu. There has been no study that says that they are successful with the COVID, but they appear to be successful. I think, you know, my complaint has been, for instance, Delta Airlines keeps the middle seat open and continues to do so. United and American don't do that. Does that make Delta more safe than the other two? There hasn't been any studies. And that's where the lack of leadership from the Department of Transportation comes in. The Department of Transportation should have issued a universal mask order in March. It should have made a determination whether the middle seats being left empty were safer than non-middle seats, and they should have issued that order. They have not been an effective leader. Now, I think if you sit in an aircraft, if you turn on the vent over your head, if you keep your mask in place, that you can have a safe flight. And the air, you know, certainly as Allie pointed out, the planes are far more clean than they ever been. I mean, American, United, Delta are all taking really extraordinary efforts to keep their aircraft clean. And I think it's showing. Allie, have you seen your planes being cleaner?
I have absolutely seen the planes being cleaned. I've seen huge teams come on in quick turnarounds to wipe down every single surface that's being touched. Nooks and crannies that unclean for longer than they should have been, but now they're getting wiped down thoroughly.
Peter, you earlier alluded to the issue of states and municipalities' role in all this. What are they?
Well, I mean, Chris can talk to the stress that airport authorities feel. You know, when you have a passenger count diminished by 50% or more, you know, you have streams of revenue, tax revenue that are disappearing. You've got landing fees that have been reduced dramatically. You've got the sale of jet fuel, which many of the airports control and profit from. So your airports are all starting to feel financial stress. But say, Chris, are you feeling it?
Yeah, you got it exactly right, Peter. When we lose those passengers, when we lose those aircraft operations, we lose that revenue associated with it. We're being asked to do more in terms of cleaning and providing service to our customers. And so we have those two things kind of working against each other. And so it has been a little bit of a stretch. And we've actually lost employees. We're not filling any of our vacancies currently. Like I said, we're trying to do more with less and with less financial resources as well.
Chris, you have a $64 million new terminal that is going to come online, I assume, still in 2022. What impact has that situation had on your planning for the new terminal?
Yeah, so that's correct. We are under construction. We started construction in December of 2018 on a new terminal project. So we're well underway. We're approaching 50%. I guess if there's a silver lining, construction has been somewhat easier when you don't have cars or passengers or airplanes, but at the same time, we don't have the money either. And so that's been a little bit of a challenge to meet with our financial team, our banks that are financing our project and the FAA. We're fortunate that we had most of our financing package in place, but it does mean that we had a second phase of the terminal. Now looks like we'll postpone.
Allie, we talked a little bit about flight attendants, you know, concerns about safety of the aircraft. What about the issue of interface with passengers and the issue of passengers that resist wearing masks? How has the Flight Attendants Association, you know, dealt with that?
Passenger misconduct reports have greatly increased since this pandemic has begun, and almost all of them are related to mask wearing compliance. Flight attendants are responsible for the safety of all our passengers on board. We are here to mitigate conflict, to de-escalate conflict, but it's gotten quite challenging in the airplane as wearing masks has become a politicized act. Our policies have changed within the airline. We report, you know, who it is that might not be complying, and the company will follow up. However, you know, they'll likely not divert a flight because someone isn't wearing their mask. As we've previously mentioned, I think that a universal mask mandate would be very helpful for all of us in this industry, for certainly for flight attendants who are charged with, you know, ensuring that people are wearing their masks on the plane, but to create a consistent rule across the industry. And I think even the airlines would benefit from that because it would be a new regulation that is required by our FAA. So will continue to be a problem. If you're not able to wear a mask, maybe there's a different mode of transportation that would be more suitable.
Peter, what do you think will be the permanent changes as a result of COVID-19?
I think there's going to be a couple of things. One is, I think there's going to be a serious review of what the FAA could and should have done in this pandemic. And there'll be changes in the leadership if there's a new administration. I think that the idea that the industry is going to bounce back suddenly is not correct. And we're going to have to figure out how to structure the industry over the next 2 or 3 years as it gradually returns. What they call the flyover states and the small, mid-sized cities may start losing service at a high rate. I noticed that Missoula just got a bump from Alaska Airlines on daily flights, and Alaska is one of the premier carriers in the country, and that they were going to pick up 4 to 6 new flights, Chris. Isn't that right? Which is really extraordinary, I think.
Yeah, that is correct, Peter. It's an interesting dichotomy for us where we see empty airplanes and less passengers going through our facilities, and at the same time, we have airlines, Alaska in particular, adding service. And so, we're trying to wrap our brains around largest expansion of air service in the history of Missoula. And at the same time, we're seeing, record drops in our current passenger numbers.
But Arnie, I think the key thing is that there's not going to be a sudden bounce back to pre-COVID levels. This is going to be a wrestling match for probably 18 months to 2 years. I'll give you one more example, is the cruise industry. The idea that the cruise industry is going to bounce back and the air travel related to feeding the cruise industry is really questionable. Who's going to get on a cruise ship without perhaps a valid medical ID that says you've got the vaccine or you've got the antibody? And without those two things, people are just not going to get on those boats.
Well, also, you have the whole fundamental rethinking of business air travel. How do you think that's going to play out?
Air travel is going to have to be absolutely essential for people to take it, to just make it convenient, to make it a sales pitch that you might or might not be able to close on. People are going to rely on Zoom. They're going to rely on remote conferencing. I think the business travel, the front of the plane, which was always the most profitable, as Allie will tell you, that's going to be awfully tough to fill in the immediate future.
Mentioning that point, Allie, as you've been flying lately, what has the plane balance been between the front of the plane and the main cabin?
Every flight I show up for, I never know what I'm going to get, if it's going to be an empty plane or if it's going to be a completely full plane. We've kind of gotten away from April and May when most planes were half empty, if that, but we're definitely seeing a drop off in business travel. We're not hanging anyone's suit jackets right now. It's mostly leisure travel, essential travel, transporting important goods and services, and keeping interstate commerce going.
We are speaking with CNN commentator and former managing director of the National Transportation Safety Board, Peter Goltz. Allie Malice, American Airlines flight attendant and government relations representative for the 27,000-member Association of Professional Flight Attendants, and Missoula International Airport Director Chris Jensen. Support for this episode of Can Do is provided by Montana Rail Links, committed to safely delivering transportation solutions to their clients. Additional support comes from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. And Parsons, Bailey & Latimer, a regional law firm with national expertise representing the interests of Montana entrepreneurs and businesses. More information at ParsonsBailey.com. Peter, Amtrak is running at about 50% capacity now. Weekday New York City subway and bus traffic is down 75% and 50% respectively. Public transportation in every major city has taken a huge hit by all of this. What do you see, and how are they tackling the problems, and who's tackling those problems?
The idea that workers are going to comfortably use mass transit to go back to work, I think, is a serious challenge. Here in Washington, D.C., they're running at about 30% capacity. Now, the trains are cleaner than ever, and the buses are cleaner than ever. But still, the capacity, the idea of getting into a socially non-distance rail car or bus is really unpalatable to the general public. And I don't think there's going to be a significant economic bounce back until that problem is solved, until we've got the vaccine. The only upside that has occurred for mass transit is they've been able to get caught up on a bunch of essential maintenance that they hadn't been able to address. But Amtrak is certainly not going to get much above 50 or 60% because people just don't want to sit next to somebody. And the same thing is true with buses. And until there's a vaccine, until there's better confidence that it's safe, those modes of transportation are simply not going to rebound, I don't believe.
Many people who travel in metropolitan areas into their job, whether it's New York or Washington or Chicago or LA, or many of those people that travel in don't have the luxury necessarily of staying home and telecommuting. They're not white-collar workers. They're essential workers. There are service workers who in big cities rely on mass transportation to go to work. You're almost forced, if you want to keep your job, to do that.
Well, that's right, Arnie. And you know, we're seeing a class separation in terms of those that are being stricken most seriously by COVID-19. Those of us, you know, who have the luxury of driving or not working or working from home, figured out strategies to escape it in many cases. But for someone who's on the line at a merchandising or manufacturing or an office place, they don't have that luxury. And it's still a pretty threatening experience.
Allie, let me switch back to the plight of flight attendants. You mentioned you got a letter saying that you may be laid off. I want to talk about layoffs, but I also want to talk about how much power do flight attendants and other employees of the unions have in the decision-making of the FAA and the other national agencies and organizations, and to the airlines directly themselves.
Flight attendants are a powerful force. We wanted to wear masks, and now we're required to wear masks. That's just one example within our company. We certainly interact with the FAA to make sure that our regulations are keeping us safe and that our input as frontline essential workers is being taken into consideration. And we will continue to do that.
Allie, how many members are in your union?
We have 27,000 flight attendants. That's just at American Airlines. And as of Tuesday, it was announced that 8,099 of us will be furloughed in October should Congress not act and not pass an extension of the payroll support program, which has stabilized our industry and kept us connected to our paychecks and our healthcare amidst this global pandemic. There are 75,000 U.S. aviation workers who could lose their jobs. Just over 75,000 these jobs could disappear virtually overnight. Payroll support program that was included in the CARES Act back in March protected flight attendants and all U.S. aviation workers for 6 months. It's not an airline bailout. This money can only be used to support frontline aviation workers who would otherwise be out of a job because of the severe drop in passenger demand. This goes to fund our health care during this global pandemic, and it keeps our industry stable. And we look forward to an extension of this program from September through the end of March, hopefully. All unions are all hands on deck working with Congress to make sure that this is included in our next stimulus bill. And we have a very hard deadline. That's October 1st. That's when 75,000 U.S. aviation workers could lose their jobs virtually overnight.
And Peter, if we lose 75,000 workers, what impact will that have?
Well, the 75,000 workers is a minimum number. Most people expect on October 1st for that number to exceed 100,000 workers. And here's what the challenge is. If we believe in the 21st century that, you know, commercial aviation is a cornerstone of our economy, and it needs to be in place for this economy to recover. And we're in the greatest depression since the Great Depression of 1932 and 33. We need to have the aviation industry in place and ready to go. We got to have the airports ready to pick up the slack. We got to have the air carriers ready to expand. And if they've laid off tens of thousands of skilled workers, we just won't be ready to bounce back when it's right, when the economy is ready to go, and it's going to hurt all of us.
Chris, when a customer goes to the airport now, what should they expect? What are you telling people who are saying, what's the experience going to be like in the midst of COVID-19?
One of the challenges that we have as an airport is maybe something that Peter mentioned earlier in the conversation, is that there hasn't been a consistent plan across the country. And so you see airports each doing kind of what they think is best. And until recently, it could have been a different experience depending on where you're at. I think now, generally, masks are, you know, if not mandatory, highly encouraged. The airlines are certainly looking for ways to go to more of a touchless experience as the passengers are checking in, whether they're checking bags or getting boarding passes. Of course, everybody has to go through the Transportation Security Administration checkpoint, and that's another area of exposure potentially for everybody where you're interacting with that process. And so I think, you know, there's certainly discussion about how to change that, but in the short term, passengers are still going through all of the same processes that they've always gone through. All of those touch points still exist. And of course, from an airport perspective, and of course, we're the place that the passengers go for departure and arrival. So we have every passenger from every airline on both ends of the operation.
Peter, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but I want to be definitive about it. If you were running Department of Transportation now, whatever agency has jurisdiction over the industry response to COVID-19, what steps would you be taking right now?
Part of it goes back to following the science and following the recommendations, you know, of our scientific leadership at the CDC and the infectious diseases specialist. One, I would have ordered that masks be mandatory on all aircraft, on all airports, at check-ins. I would have done that in March. That's the first thing. Secondly, I would have, you know, the FAA controls a medical research center in Oklahoma City called CAMI, Civil Aeronautical Medical Institute. They are the world's foremost experts on cabin air quality. And they've done studies over the years on how to maintain cabin air quality, how to monitor it, how to see if when you have these odors on planes, whether they're dangerous or not. I would have ordered CAMI in March to study specifically whether the HEPA filters were adequate, whether they needed to be improved. I would have asked them to study how the virus transmits inside a cabin environment. We've had some very rudimentary studies. We've speculated, but I would have applied all of the resources of the FAA and DOT to addressing this problem. And that they weren't, you know, applied to this challenge is really disgraceful.
One last question for each of you. I'm going to ask Peter first. What piece of advice would you give to our listeners thinking about or planning to fly in the near future? What's the one thing you would tell them?
I think they need to review carefully whether the flight is essential. If it's essential, if they think they need to do it and they've got to do it, it can be done safely. And it means, you know, making sure you've got the right kind of mask, making sure you've got the right kind of disinfectant. Make a decision yourself whether you want to fly with a middle seat open or not. Follow the instructions of the flight attendants. If you see people who are not fully masked inside the plane, point it out to the flight attendants. When you're in the terminal, try and keep your distance. But I think, you know, in general, flying can be done safely. You got to pay attention.
Chris, what about from an air terminal perspective?
I'll start by saying that in the next 3 weeks, I have two trips planned. And so I'm going to tell you that I believe that flying can be safe. I think if you do the things that Peter said, we as passengers need to take a little bit of responsibility for our safety. We need to follow the CDC, the science, as Peter said, direction, wear your mask, you know, sanitize your space when you get on board, do what the flight attendants tell you. You know, we do have some ability to control the situation a little bit and make sure that we're practicing safe behaviors. And so all of those things apply in the terminal as well, as Peter said, whether it's social distancing or wearing our mask or minimizing our impact or interactions with other people.
Allie, what do you have to say to potential passengers?
Flying was stressful before the pandemic. It's certainly stressful now. That goes for flight crew, that goes for passengers. To our, you know, potential passengers, to remember that we're all in this together. We're in a stressful position. We're all trying to get to where we need to go to show some kindness to not only the flight crew, but to passengers and each other on the plane, and we'll all get to where we need to go as quickly and as smoothly as possible.
And on that note, Peter, Chris, Ali, you have been very enlightening guests. Thank you for your insights, and safe travel to you all. I appreciate your listening to Can Do, produced by Peter Hoag and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests' contact information and content from all our shows. Listen next time when we explore the future of education, particularly how it intersects with the post-COVID work world. I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you good health and prosperity.